Live from New York City.
New York City.
In New York City, the greatest city in the world.
Broadcasting around the world, you're listening to the Real Estate Coaching Podcast with Cashwain Campbell. He's a top real estate broker, investor, and author. It's real estate coaching for you. We interview some of the top leaders in our industry. Here is Cashwain. Cashwain.
Hey guys, welcome to the Real Estate Coaching Podcast. I am your host, Cashwain Campbell. I'm very, very excited today. I have two very, very special guests in the real estate space and also the Airbnb space. All of the things, the major things right now that people are making money off of. We're going to talk Turo. We're going to talk Airbnb. You know, we're going to definitely get you guys some good information today. So welcome to the Real Estate Coaching Podcast, Mr. Investment Grow Inc., Mr. Justin. Welcome, Justin.
What's up, man? How you feeling, man?
Thanks for having me, man. Huh?
Thanks for having me on board.
Definitely. Thank you for joining us. And we also have out of Texas, right, Coach Platinum. Coach, what's up, man? Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, man. It's a pleasure. Look, I'm just happy to be here with some heavy hitters like yourselves. So I'm definitely appreciate the opportunity for real. Thank you.
Definitely, definitely. All right. So, you know, let's jump right into it before we go into, you know, more information. I just want to find out from you guys, you know, how you got started and what you do and what is it exactly that you do. So, Justin, let's start with you first. Are you hearing me? You guys are hearing the audio, right?
I can hear you. So, I'm a licensed real estate agent, as you already know, in New York. And I also have an auto brokerage. So, I'm an auto broker, one of the top ones in New York. It's called Direct Auto by LIC out of Long Island City. Mm-hmm. And basically, what we specialize in is just helping our clients, educating our clients in the car buying process.
Got it. Okay, good. Thank you, Justin. And also Coach Platinum, what is it that you do?
Oh man, so I got my hands in a few things, but real estate has definitely been, beautiful for me. I focus on short-term and long-term rentals, from private tenants to Airbnb, which has been beautiful. And I dibble and dabble in Turo, trading, stocks and options and Forex. So pretty much across the board, multiple streams is the mission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Multiple streams of income is definitely one of the keys to making it in this lifetime. Right. And also leaving something for our families. Right. Legacy is big. Right. So, Justin, I see you have Direct Auto. Right. What led to Direct Auto? Like, why, why'd you guys start that?
Well, actually, it's family owned and operated. Mm-hmm. It's me and my uncle are partners there. And basically, working in a dealership, you really don't have no life. It's like a punch in and, you're from bell to bell. You're from there, from open to close. It's very time demanding. And we more so wanted to find a way to help our clients and also find time where you can make, to your kids practice without having to ask for some time off. Like, just imagine saying, hey, excuse me, can I go to my daughter's graduation? And the boss is like, hold on, your daughter's graduation happened at this time? No, we need you here. Like, right, so basically we need that freedom.
Got it. So basically it's just freedom. Were you working like at a dealership beforehand or how'd you get into that?
I was working at Jeep for probably a little bit over 6 years. There's a funny story behind it because I actually I got let go right before COVID.
Wow.
I got let go right before COVID and it actually changed my life, which was cool. But they kind of let me go because I was always that salesperson for the customer. So I'm also like a caller. Like I was the person that was always, helping the customer out and giving the customers in and out and like little tips and tools that they needed, to make the transaction easier. Like I was educating the customer prior to they even going in the box. So
yeah, definitely. And you gotta, you know, in order to make it as a salesperson, you got to go above and beyond, because for the customer, because a good percentage of what we do is really customer service, or any business at that is really customer service. So after
sales is definitely a skill set, like, and I figured that's why I kind of, because I did real estate first, then I went into cars, and then I did both. But I definitely know sales is a skill set, like, and it's all about following.
Definitely, definitely. So, so after leaving Jeep, so I guess it was like a blessing then. So after they, after, you know, you left there, you were like, all right, cool, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, start my own thing. So
actually, my uncle already had Direct Auto Buy. He was still like dibbling and dabbling. He's 20 years in that industry as well, finance director. So he kind of like winged me. He's kind of like, yo, come partner up with me. I can't do this by myself. And we're going to split this bread. Let's run it up, nephew.
Gotcha.
We kind of had everything like kind of like already established. Like, it was kind of like, yo, just come in. Let me show you. Let me teach you how to, you know, get your time back and make more money.
Got it. So pretty much it's about time, money, and freedom for you, which is why you decide, you know, I guess, you know, I know you have
that was the purpose for me actually, you know, like going on my own. But then it became a little bit more like, you know, like a love. Like, I just love to help people naturally. Like, I'm just a people's person.
Got it.
Now I found something that I can do and love at the same time. Like, I don't have to rob and steal for my customers to make money.
There's a saying that they said, once you can get time and money out of the way, you can really start to live life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When you're not worried about time or you're not worried about money, you can really start to live life. So I'm happy to, you know, to see you doing that.
I'm gonna be good over there.
Definitely. Coach, what's up, man? So for you in the Airbnb space, I know that's also a big thing right now. What got you involved in that? What were you doing before? Because I love to hear, I love the backstory. Like, I know I saw your Instagram too. I saw, you know, Justin, I see your Instagram. You selling cars right now, left and right. You're doing your thing. But I love the backstory. What were these guys doing before they got to where they're at? Because some people is just overnight, right? These Instagram overnight success. But I know you guys aren't overnight success. So, Coach, what were you doing before?
Oh, man. So, actually, it's so funny because most of the stuff that has happened now, I actually met Just when he was working at Jeep. You know,
wow.
So when we look at the timeline, we said it the other day, I'm like, yo, I remember when you were working at Jeep, and he was like, yo, come to Jeep, and you know, we got this and that, and to see what he's been able to do. So a little bit on the background, and you know, I graduated 2018 out of college. Mm-hmm. You know, a year into it, COVID kind of just came out of nowhere. I had my own entertainment company in New York. I was doing parties, concert productions, hookah, and it was doing extremely well. And then COVID happened, you know, that March. In that time, I was overseas in London, and COVID just came out of nowhere, you know, became a global pandemic in the middle of March. And all my businesses kind of just fell to the ground. You know, my credit got shot. I lost pretty much anything to do with entertainment, just fell out. You know, especially being in New York, you understand, you know, that was the height of the pandemic. So, you know, it went from so many streams to like zero streams. So, you know, at that point, I had to, you know, I picked up trading, you know, got really well at it, joined a company that, you know, I was able to network and meet individuals. And I ended up moving to Houston in 2020, still within the pandemic, you know, New York was still shut down. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm making it back on my feet, but I'm still not where I used to be. So I had a luxury apartment in Houston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of me, like, learning the trade, you know, I started looking into Airbnb. I started looking into Turo, how to have more passive streams of income without maybe having to, like, physically be there. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I spent, you know, about probably 6 to 8 months just studying and learning. And, you know, when you learn something, it's like you can only learn so much without actually taking that leap. You know, so I did all the numbers, the calculations, and everything made sense, except I never took the shot. I never gave it a chance. So I was approaching you know, that a little bit after the midway point of my lease at my high rise, and I realized that the only way to get in the game is you needed to get an apartment. And I was like, okay, how can I start this, you know, without much capital? Mm-hmm. What could I do to understand how this business works? Same thing with Turo. It was like, I want to get into Turo, but how do I get a car for Turo without going to purchase a new car? So, you know, I was trying to figure out in between, and I decided to, you know, the opportunity came where I had a roommate, you know, he kind of bailed out, and I was like, okay, cool. So I definitely need to figure out a way to really make this make sense. And I was like, you know what? Let me put it on Airbnb. I did the study. I knew about how to list it, how to advertise it, how to do the pricing. You know, just like in real estate, you know, they give you a CMA. I did the same thing, but for Airbnb. You know what I'm saying? I was able to understand the market analysis, see what my conversion rate would be, what my occupancy rate would be, and I took that shot. Let's just say that shot kind of just took off. You know, it felt like a LeBron Jordan moment because once I, you know, hit the ground, you know, I started running. And then I turned my current, it was so crazy that I had to end up, you know, I stayed over friends' houses. I rented out hotels. Like I was getting booked so much. I was like, well, okay, I eventually have to leave here. You know what I'm saying? And when it came to a point, someone booked a month and I was like, oh,
wow.
Yeah. I was like, oh no, it's time to really get out of here. So I took that experience and I said, well, okay. I had my trading income. You know, I just took my Airbnb leave, you know, what could I do next? Tyler said, you know, hey, you know, let's jump. Let's go get a penthouse and really see what avenues I could push from there. The Airbnb started to take off. I started to understand and strategize, you know, how to take my trading capital to keep investing and how to scale up. And of course, you know, like being real, like you have to, like the Airbnb route was the kind of the illegal route because it was like, you know, they don't allow subleasing in a lot of places, but it was like, hey, you know, I had to take that risk, you know, and then from there, I was able to find legal, you know, places to actually have Airbnb. And then the numbers just started scaling after, you know, 1 month of starting, you made your 2000 profit. By month three, you added another property. So now you're bringing 4,000 and then the numbers just kind of scaled. And then from there, I was like, I wanted to go bigger. And then I went international, and international is kind of what really changed the game for me. And just anyone in my camp, because, you know, it's nothing like consistent money all the clock round. So it's like we could be in a recession now, but it's like international is still paying. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah, definitely.
International jump, that's what really took it to a whole nother financial level. But it wasn't easy. You know what I'm saying? Like the trials and errors, you know, but in between that, just coming up with that system for automation and how things work, it kind of changed the dynamic and it made things, you know, make sense. And once it starts making sense, you could say, you know what, all right, this is how we scale, this is how we grow, you know, and this is where we go from, you know, from the small niche right here to going global.
Definitely. That's amazing, man. And I want to, and we're going to come back to the Airbnb because we want to obviously, you know, learn more about that. So I want to definitely get back to you with that. I want to start with this question for you though, Justin. I want to jump back to you real quickly. I seen the other day on your Instagram, you were talking about Turo just hitting New York. So what is it that's actually going on with that? Because I had some realtors hit me up and like, you know, they're saying to me, hey, they want to go buy a nice car. And when, you know, they're not out showing, they want to also put the car on Turo and make some extra income. So how can somebody do something like that? That's a question I'm getting. I'm like, I don't know about Turo.
So Turo was just about everywhere except for New York up until the end of June. And they basically opened up where they was going to start insuring, you know, like New York, I guess New York clients or people that's actually in New York trying to do the Turo. So like pretty much they just opened up the floodgates. And I think within the first, 24 hours, they had like 600 cars listed on Turo for New York, something like that.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Like everybody who ever wanted to do New York Turo was Jersey, like outskirts. And then they was just, you know, putting the cars inside New York.
Got it. So you think there's, even though there were 600 cars listed, you think there's still room for people to make money there?
Absolutely. It's all about marketing. Like people, all right, this is the one thing that me and DP specialize in. What we do is we do the market analysis. We're not just going in there and saying, like, you know what, we're going to buy this car, we're going to list it. We're actually doing our homework. That's what makes us great as what we do. So we're not just going to say, you know what, let me just grab a Honda and put it on Toro for any price or whatever price I think is going to make sense. No, we're actually going to do the calculation. We're going to see how many cars that they have that's a Honda that's on Toro currently in that area. We're going to do what exactly are those cars averaging and going for? Like, how often are they booked? Like, we're looking into every single aspect and corner. So when we do pull a trigger, it's calculated. It's not just like, you know what, let's just do it.
Yeah, and I think that's what's happening right now a lot.
And I numbers think that's gonna lie, you know that.
Huh?
I said numbers don't lie. We all know 2 + 2 = 4, 1 + 3 = 4, but 1 + 1 = 2. Like, it just has to add up.
It's just like doing, you know, in real estate when you do a CMA, right? You really want to, you know, you're comparing apples to apples and you're really checking before you list that house, checking the numbers.
Right. Like, you're not going to compare a 2-bedroom, you know, 1 bath to a 4-bedroom, 3 bath. It's not happening. Like, you're not.
Gotcha. So what would you guys say to those people out there who are saying, hey, I just want to buy a Rolls Royce? When I'm not showing real estate, just throw it on Toro.
First thing first, Toro has limits. Like you really got to do your research. Like, mm-hmm. a Rolls Royce might not even be covered underneath a Toro policy. Like,
wow.
Huh? Yeah, it's crazy. I done had a couple people make that mistake, go buy big cars, you know what? And then, you know, like a renter crashes the car. And now Toro's like, yo, here, this is our cap. This is our cap off. You have to handle the difference. So...
definitely. So you want to, it's just like real estate. Before you buy it, you definitely want to be very careful, you know, with your numbers. It's like an investment, right? Real estate investment. You know, before we, you know, we buy something to rehab it, you know, we're definitely looking and crunching those numbers before we actually jump into that project. So now the Airbnb thing, right? Because I'm hearing a lot about this too. The Airbnb thing. What's up? You know, how does someone get into that? Like, if they want to make some passive income, I just closed a bunch of real estate deals and I want to make my money work for me. Like, how does somebody jump into that, Coach?
Jeez.
Well, it's crazy to say that because Justin and I was, you know, just talking about that. You know, I think the biggest thing that comes down first is understanding the difference between if you want to buy or if you want to rent, you know. Rental arbitrage has been huge, but there are people in positions that have the capital, you know, to purchase. Now, purchase is a long-term game, but you make your money in a sense about the same speed. But the difference is, like, hey, some people don't have, you know, $100,000, $200,000 to put down on a $1.2 million house, but, you know, they could put together $30,000, $40,000 to get it through a rental and then run it the same exact way. Because at the end of the day, the money comes through the platform. Right. You're making money from your private bookings. You're making money from, you know, not just Airbnb, there's VRBO, HomeAway, Expedia, Booking. So there's so many platforms that, you know, people are looking for, because no matter recession or not, people need three things, you know, a car to drive, you know, food to eat, and a place to stay. Right. And that's relatively across every type of platform. So, you know, the first step is first understanding what is your capital, you know, limit, you know, whether you can use your own capital, right? Or you can use the capital from the banks, leveraging your credit, which is super huge. There's so many different ways, but I always tell people, hey, you know what? Before you ever buy something, why not rent? You know what I'm saying? Before you go buy a car, it's better for you to rent the car to see if you maybe like it. You know what I'm saying? So the first step is like getting your feet wet in that aspect. And then the second step is obviously doing your research. You know, I meet so many people, like, and it's not like a thing of shade, but there's so many people that try to like run into the industry and they get like, they get bodied, you know what I'm saying? Just like anything else. No, like it's just understanding, like, there's so much, you know, that happens, you know, throughout the industry. You have to understand, you know, your occupants, you have to see your competition. You have to see, you know, the difference between what's common and what's not. You know, there's a lot of people that want to go, let's say the less, I want to say the cheaper route, but the less expensive route, you know what I'm saying? And understanding how that works is like, okay, you're going to pay less now, but you're going to end up spending more in the long run because people look for, you know, quality. So people look.
It's funny you say that, because I try to tell people that when they're buying cars, like, don't get the base model.
Right.
Don't do it to yourself. If you're going to do something, get something mid-entry. And they never understand it until they're in it. And then it's kind of like, you want to know why? And I tell people that because it's kind of like the depreciation is gonna beat you in the long run.
Absolutely. Because you pay for what you get, in other words, right? Okay. And I hear a lot of, you know, even with the Airbnb, I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, I live in New York and I want to do one. I had a friend that did one in LA actually. And, you know, he had a bad experience because the problem was he had one of his friends managing it. And it's like, it's a Saturday night. And then, you know, the guest has a complaint and his friend is like, yeah, I'm going out with my girl. you know what I mean?
Nah, that's OD.
So he started getting bad reviews, so he lost the super host. You know, because when you, that's another thing too that they don't tell you. Like when you have like a Airbnb set up, you know, you gotta be on point with the service. It can't be my friend or my cousin that's taking care of this. I think you should have somebody reliable that's able to answer these inquiries because if I'm mistaken, this is your space, right? You can get some bad reviews, no?
100%. See, the difference with the industry standard is that people don't focus on becoming what's reliable. They focus on what's a liability. And a lot of people fail to realize that they are a liability to their own success. You know, I meet people so many times and they're like, yo, you know, my mom's going to clean my Airbnb or yeah, I'm going to do it this way. And like, I'll just sit back and listen. And I'll be like, all right, you know, I understand, like, you know, there's shortcuts, but when it comes to your money, you know, you shouldn't really take shortcuts. Like, all the education, whether it's like, even right now, working on my license, you know, boom, I spent $1,000+. You know, I'm doing exam preps. I'm investing into my education and into myself, right? So I hate when people, you know, cut themselves short and take a shortcut on themselves because they'll spend the money somewhere else, but they're going to take their shortcut, you know, like what they're doing. For example, and that's why when people ask, like, why do you live like at your where you live? And it's like, well, why would I take the shortcut on how I want to live when it's about me? You know what I'm saying? If you don't put yourself first, then it's like, what comes after that? Your business is not going to help you. Nothing's going to help you if you can't put yourself first. You know, so a lot of people need to stop being a liability in that aspect and look into the proper thing. That's why there's property management. That's why there's professionals. You know what I'm saying? If you're bleeding, you're not going to go to your homeboy and say, hey, man, can you stitch me up? You're going to go to the hospital because there's someone with a profession who can help make it easier for you. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's the same way. Same thing with your car. You're not going to say, hey, homie, can you help me fix my car? Homie, you're going to find a professional, a mechanic, you know, someone who is skilled in this area, who has put in over 10,000 hours to master a specific skill set that you can now exchange for money. You know, Diddy said the craziest thing, right? He pays people so he can grow and get everything done. That's the key, is like you have to attain people with the profession because you can't know everything. Like, for example, when Just talks about cars, I have a crazy fleet of Toro cars. You think I knew everything about cars? I didn't know about the equity you can get in cars, except I'm like, hey, Just, I need to use your services because this is not my lane. But I'm trying to do A, B, C, D, and E. And you know what he did? He's like, let's just draw the blueprint, draw a plan. So, you know, I feel like a lot of people just have a preconceived misconception of what, you know, actually being an entrepreneur and running a business is and what actually receiving passive or even residual income is actually about. And, you know, that's why a lot of people fail. Like, the percentage of success is small because of, you know, ignorance, you know what I'm saying? And lack of ignorance is because of lack of education.
Absolutely. And leverage is key, you know, leveraging yourself. We've seen that since the beginning of time, you know, even, you know, franchises, when people develop franchises and you know, certain business models, all they're doing is leveraging themselves. They're not trying to, you know, do it all themselves, own everyone themselves. They understand that they need a team around them. So they franchise out that business, you know.
How big is your team, Cash? I'm just curious. How big is your real estate?
Oh, we have here. I have over like 200 plus. You know, So we're working. We're working. You know, but leverage is key. You know, I heard Jim Rohn say, he's a motivational speaker, service to many leads to greatness, and I think people forget that part of it. But yeah, man, definitely, I agree with you guys on that. So Justin, this question for you. realtors out there, should they finance a lease?
Yo, and that's all up to the. And the reason why I'm saying is everybody drives different. Some people drive 20,000 miles a year. Some people drive 3,000 miles a year. Some people, you know, like to drive. Some people don't like to drive. Some people look for a certain type of budget, you know, and certain people don't have no budget. Like it's always.
So
there's a lot of pros and cons, right?
So if you, leasing,
I'm gonna tell you what leasing is. Leasing is like a privilege, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's stupid low interest rates on leasing, and it's kind of like a long term rental, right? So just say like you lease a car, you pay $500 a month, $600 a month, and at the end of the day, you would not pay that price if you were to finance it. It's usually about half the price of a finance, or probably like three-fourths of the price of a finance, but it's a privilege. Only those with excellent credit could lease. So, and then, you know, finance is a little different. I could get anybody pretty much financed. You got 400 score, then anybody could finance. As long as you have like income and you have like, you know, like just certain things like steps, same thing with the mortgage. You know, they got a cap, what rate you at. I mean, at what credit level you could be at and what rate you get. It's the same thing with finance.
Yeah, it's a valid question, because what happens is, as my agents are just real estate agents, period, they start making money, you know, they want to switch out the car. So, you know, and go ahead, Justin.
I was about to say, I think real estate agents, though, depending on how aggressive you are in the field, I think that you could put a lot of miles on your car if you're really, really aggressive. If you out there, you moving, you shaking, that means you at A to B to Z to D to D, wherever you at, that means you're going to be moving around a lot. Now, if you have an agent that's more so like a delegate, like a delegating type of agent, somebody that's more like a broker that's sitting back, relaxing in the office and calling shots and sending people around and got a lot, a big team to help them out, then you know what? It might make sense for you to lease. But if you're somebody that's really out there moving and shaking and you're driving 20,000 miles a year, then you might be better on financing. In this current market, financing it, depending on exactly what car it is, you can pay just as much as you're paying for a lease.
Yeah, but one thing I would say is that when you lease it, you know, you give it back within 2 years, 3 years, with financing, you're holding that car, especially if you got that with a higher interest rate, you can then start to go underwater with that. No?
Listen, I'm a car guy, right? I'm a real estate. Yeah. I lease.
That's definitely not my profession.
I drive a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just funny because I drive a lot, I put a lot of miles on my car. Mm-hmm. But I prefer leasing, and the reason why I'm going to tell you why I prefer leasing is because it's a new car, it's reliable. You don't have to worry about servicing it besides like oil changes and stuff like that. So you can actually beat the car up for 2 to 3 years without having to worry about, you know, mechanical problems. It's underneath a full warranty, which is, you know, probably from the manufacturer. So there's a lot of coverage that you have with a lease and you're paying a lesser price versus if you finance the car, whether it's new or maybe if it wasn't new, it was used, whatever the case may be, you're going to have to worry about the normal wear and tear.
Gotcha. So, yeah. So, you know, it I guess it depends on the person. You know, I've done both finance and lease. So I think it just really depends on the person themselves, you know, the direction that they would like to take with that. Go ahead.
You drive a lot of miles on your car, Cash?
Depending on what I would say I do drive a lot of miles.
Yeah, and you want to know what's so crazy? I'm the type of person, I like when people come to me, I'm kind of like a car lawyer, right? Because I make things make sense. So I ask somebody, like, yo, listen, what's your average commute to work? All right, after work, what do you do? All right, I go pick up my kids. All right, from there, and I make them do the math. So how many miles are you driving a day? All right, you're driving 50 miles a day. All right, bet. So out of 365 days, you work this many days. All right, so you're probably going to be driving about 220. You do the numbers. I've been a numbers guy, right? So I do the numbers. I make it make sense. And if you over the average amount of miles, I'd be like, yo, you might be better off finance.
Yeah. Definitely. Because you're calculating the miles. Definitely.
Right. Definitely. Right. And now if you got multiple cars, then it's kind of like, all right, cool. You can lease. You just break
definitely.
It up.
Definitely. All right, cool. You know, so I know you guys heard about the interest rates recently, the real estate interest rates. What do you guys think about the interest rates?
It's crazy because I'm ready to jump in the market and buy a house right now. And
gotta wait.
I'm like, yo.
Hold on. You know, when they raise the interest rates, it's a way to combat inflation. See, right. they don't expect you to say that. They expect you to say, you know what, I'm about to hold off on buying a house because of the interest rate. But it's so crazy where the economy is at right now, where interest rates is, where interest rates on everything goes up. Interest rates on everything is going up. And people are like, you know, I'm still about to go buy something.
I gotta get a house regardless. So right now, this year, between this year and next year is my time. So I'm getting one regardless. But have you lost any deals because of that jump in like March, April-ish?
Well, I mean, we have some buyers who, to be honest, who were priced out of the market. But it hasn't really affected our business, really. I mean, we're still closing homes left and right. I think it kind of cooled down the market because during the pandemic, when you went out there to see a home, you know, on an open house line, you're talking 30 to 40 people on that open house line, right? Now,
the bidding wars is crazy.
Huh?
The bidding wars is crazy. Houses flying off the shelf like.
Yeah, I saw one property that was $100,000 over asking.
Oh, what?
$100,000 over asking. The people came $100,000 cash over asking.
They wanted right? that house.
That was during the height of the pandemic.
They wanted that house.
They wanted that house.
Where was that house located at? I gotta hit the location.
That was location what was that house? I think it was somewhere like Massapequa area, like in one of those areas.
Massapequa's a nice area.
Yo. Yeah, it was like
I went mom going to Massapequa.
Yeah, it was like in one of those areas. They came $100,000 over asking, bro. They came strong. You know what I mean? And they weren't obviously during that time too. A lot of people were doing. They're still doing it now. No appraisal like contingency. G-wagon. Huh?
Sound like a G-wagon.
$100,000 over asking. Yeah, G-wagon, right? And it was, and people are still doing it in the market right now, no appraisal contingency. So even if the appraisal comes in short, they're still saying, I'm still willing to move forward.
Wow.
You know what I mean? That's how crazy the market was at that time. But, you know, I think, you know, because I hear people talk about this all the time, like, you know, do you think there's going to be a crash? What is, how is the market different than back in 2008, 2009? You know, I get those questions a lot, huh?
I said, we could talk about it. I was around during those days.
Yeah, I know you. Yeah, I know you was around during those days, you know, and I feel like back in those days, banks didn't, you know, it came to a point where banks stopped lending because they just didn't, you know, have it to lend. Now banks have the money. They have the money to lend, and they're just making the guidelines just a little bit, you know, tougher, you know, a little bit harder, but they're still lending. You know what I mean? Back then, if you remember, Justin, they stopped actually funding the loans. Go ahead.
Nah, I remember.
Yeah. So right now, I think the economy is strong, and that's why they're raising interest rates all around the board to combat inflation. You know what I mean? Because, you know, when you have supply and demand, you're going to have inflation. So the idea behind raising an interest rate is to raise it enough to where a buyer says, you know what, I'm going to think twice about buying X.
Didn't they just raise it like last week or something like that?
They raised it on Thursday.
What, 0.75 or something like that?
Yeah, it was something light. But the thing is,
it wasn't that light because look, imagine going from 5.25 to 6% on your mortgage.
But bro, back in 19,
that's not like hard money to me.
13%.
Listen, I wasn't around.
I wasn't around then.
I heard about it. I was like 6%. 7%, they was like, yo, back in the days, it was 13. I'm like, 13. But then again, back in the days, houses was $80,000, $100,000.
That's what I'm saying. So it's $80,000, $100,000 for your house, and your interest rate was 13%. Now we're crying about
the monthly was still low.
It was still low. So
the monthly was still, it gotta make sense.
And the craziest thing is back then, they were trying to refinance people probably to like 7%. Yeah, wow. People were, you know, like rates were 13 and they were trying to refinance people to probably like 7%.
So how many people did you have come asking for a streamline or refinance? I know you was calling all your buyers back when they dropped the rates.
Of course. I have buyers right now, bro, older buyers that I closed years ago that have like they had higher interest rates. They're at like 3%, you know, things like that. They were all refinancing right when rates dropped.
What's the lowest rate you've seen?
One of my friends.
And I'm not talking about a NACA rate. I'm talking about
One of my friends. I think he has like a 3 or so, a little lower than a 3.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a good friend to have.
Yeah, because what happened was during COVID, they lowered the rates. Then it backfired because more buyers hit the market.
I know all them LOs is making money.
Yes.
I wish I was an LO back then.
Yeah, so they lowered the rates. A bunch of buyers hit the market during COVID, and then they had to make the rates higher to try to stop some buyers because it was too many buyers now, right? So that's definitely how the market's been working. How is it in Texas? In where you're at, Coach?
Honestly, the market, everyone's buying.
Like, you get your license, so I'm pretty
right. Sure. No, that's one of the reasons. Like, I have friends, so. You know, not even from like, so in Texas, you know, apartment locating is huge. You know, it's like probably just as great as Atlanta, if not a little bit better. But what I've noticed is that homes are coming on the market and the quickest sold is like a day. Like, home comes on the market, offer the next day. You know, and I have a lot of friends that are in the industry and they're selling homes. I've never seen something so fast. Well, also Texas is so huge. So especially Houston, it's constantly growing. But Houston is huge compared to like New York in a sense of like geographical location. So when people say, hey, they're buying a home in Houston, it's really like on the outskirts as well. But there's so much to be offered and everyone's moving here. You know, like every day you're running into people constantly relocating. And also because, you know, cost of living is a very, you know, I don't even want to say cheap, but not as expensive as a lot of places, you know? So people are moving here left and right. And it's like, they're building these communities. It reminds me of like a Tulum. Like, it's just, you know, every other day, a new establishment, a new home, a new apartment complex is being built. And, you know, the minute it Cash, launches, it's gone.
Hey, Cash, have you seen the homes in Texas?
No, I haven't. I was hearing about it from you.
A home in Texas is gorgeous, right? 300,000.
300, yeah.
Wow. So you crazy. Would say it's cheaper than Georgia?
Absolutely. And right. The only reason is Georgia's getting a little bit oversaturated, you know, especially where people are growing on the outer skirts. So, you know, like, you know, you have Lithonia and all those places in Atlanta, you know, on the outskirts. But the cost of living in Atlanta is going up. That's why the cost of like Airbnbs and properties are going up. So I try to like always correlate the two. And Houston has a limited amount. But you're going to start to see that turnover, just like in LA, you know, where before there was any Airbnbs, there's all the space. And now LA probably has the most Airbnbs in the US.
Wow. So with that being said, is it like, is this a move of gentrification coming to Texas? Like, you know, that what is actually happening where people can capitalize on that, I guess, if they're looking to get involved?
I think it's past, you know, gentrification. I think it's more or less people are starting to get exposed to Houston, get exposed to Texas. You know, a lot of places, like if you look from where people are moving from California, at Georgia, you know, even Florida and a lot from New York, it's just exposure. And I think because of the pandemic, you know, Texas didn't really close, you know what I'm saying? So everyone, especially on social media, everyone saw the movement during the pandemic of, oh, look, in Houston, they don't have to wear masks, you know, and that was such a big thing, you know, with you know, Senator Ted Cruz, you know, they didn't want people to wear masks. They didn't enforce a mask mandate. So I feel like people started to see that, you know, Texas is a freehold. And then, of course, when you look at a freehold and then the cost of living and then what you can find in terms of square footage, even like the cost of a hectare of land compared to in Georgia, South Carolina, Florida is way cheaper. You know what I'm saying? Just on those prices. So when you start to like, you know, put all the numbers together, it makes it, you know, more than just one reason. It's just a whole movement, and it's becoming the new Atlanta, the new LA. This is like going to Houston specifically is the new era of transition, because it's, you know, you have the entertainment aspect, which is really hot, but the cost of living is also low, so you people can afford it. And that's why a lot of people are funneling here.
Got it.
I met a lot of people when I was in Houston from all over the world. I just moved to the area. And you want to know what? I asked everybody the same thing. Like, what made you move to Houston? And they said, yo, in the pandemic, I couldn't survive. I had to come somewhere. Barbers, you know, like hairdressers, people that offer services that could not work no longer told me the reason why they came to Houston because of this.
Wow. That's big. So real quickly, before we wrap up, Coach, I wanted to find out from you, how does someone like get their first Airbnb property? How do they, that's real estate. So how do they get, you know, do I have to get pre-approved for FHA conventional loan? You know, do I have to get financing, or I could do this? Because I know all these gurus online is like, hey, you know, no money. I can show you how to flip homes with no money. $99.99 for the course.
$99.99. So, you know, FHA is cool. Now, also, depending on your area, the biggest thing you have to avoid, you know, is HOAs. And a lot of times people don't realize that is you have to see the full, you know, scope of the land, because HOA is one thing, especially like in Texas, you know, they will shut it down, you know what I'm saying, before it even starts. And they have like, it's like they're directly embedded into like the Airbnb platform where Airbnb will pull your property. So just for example, in Atlanta, when they passed, you know, the new basically restrictions on how to get an Airbnb, the process of it, you have to be a resident now of the state of Georgia. You have to have one living premises and one Airbnb. You can't have more than three. It's crazy. And literally, Airbnb had to pull 4,000 properties. So the key right now is to understand that, one, if you're looking to get into the Airbnb, I highly suggest go the rental arbitrage route. Two, you can utilize your credit, you know, take out the line of credit, use that to kind of get your startup costs, and then, you know, use finding a budget of under $3,000 a month. You know what I'm saying, is ideal. You can start with a one bedroom, one bath for about $1,300-$1,400, pay about $3,000-$4,000 in furniture. And you can find a property management anywhere ranging from about $2,000-$5,000 retainer. And they'll take probably about anywhere from like 10 to 20% of your gross. So that's really the formula to like get started. But in terms of actually now buying a property, unless you're in the LA, right? Florida, Miami, and I'll give it to even Vegas and Arizona, I wouldn't look to buy a property anywhere else for Airbnb, because your expected rate of return is not going to make sense. You know what I'm saying? It's going to take forever to make that money, because it's so competitive in highly populated cities, because people are able to go get a apartment. A two-bedroom luxury apartment will beat out a two-bedroom home. People can get a three-bedroom apartment that will beat out a three-bedroom, three-and-a-half-bath home. Because one, most apartments are located inside the loop, right? They're near public transportation. They're near the airports. There's food, taxi. Everything's like close-knit. You can't find a house or a home, let alone to purchase in that area, unless you're paying, you know, upwards of $400,000-$500,000. So at that point, it's like, even if you're getting an FHA at 3.5%, you still have a lot of a higher overhead. And if you're starting out, that's not the capacity that Airbnb was 2-3 years ago, where it was like, okay, you can make that money. It's becoming so oversaturated. You have to find the opportunities that are unique if you actually plan to, you know, make money. And that's what I hate too, when you talk about like Forex gurus, because and gurus and Airbnb and all these different Turo gurus, there's all these girls, but you fail to realize that they're giving you the information, but that has changed. The key is your location and how you're going to stand out. You know, it's no longer as easy as just get a home or get a car and just throw it on the app and make money. That time has truly passed.
Absolutely. And that's what happens. I mean, when the apps first come out, like when Uber first came out, you know, a lot of drivers were killing it, you know, and I even, you know, still own, I had bought a car and I was renting it out. And I had one of my boys had the TLC plate. I still have a TLC plate that we pay for till this day. Where New York doesn't give those anymore, right? The TLC plates. So, you know, everybody just kind of hopped on it. And I think that's what happens a lot with a lot of this stuff is like everybody just hops on it. And then once everybody jumps on it, you know, everybody's now on the Airbnb app, you know, all these restrictions now come. And then the rules are changing so fast because so many people is trying to get involved. And then some of the stuff that we may have heard is no longer true because the rules in the game has changed a long time ago.
Yeah, right? We're our biggest downfall sometimes. And when I say we, just us as human beings, you know, there's no research people. And that's what happened in Atlanta. Atlanta was a perfect example of the new provisions that are going to happen across the country because Atlanta was one of the biggest growing Airbnb cities. And just as quick as it went up, it fell right back down. They stripped almost over 4,000 properties, you know what I'm saying? Because of mismanagement, lack of authority, you know, just the fraudulent and, you know, the scams that people are running. Like people always will find a way to abuse the system. And then you have to see these stronger rules and repercussions that ruin it. And unfortunately, that's what's happening in the Airbnb space. Soon that will happen in the Turo space. So, you know, the best advice is, you know, to get in, build a foundation, build a stream, move on and just keep moving forward. Just like how, you know, the dollar was once currency, now it's fiat. You know what I'm saying? Now it's crypto. Now it's, you know, digital money. So it's just everything's constantly evolving. And exactly. And if you're not evolving, then you're dying.
Absolutely. Gotta adapt.
What's that?
Gotta adapt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one quick question before we wrap up. In the Airbnb space within itself, do you feel like a lot of these rules that are coming in is the hotels are fighting the expansion of Airbnb?
Yeah, because Airbnb has become a direct competitor to all hotels and, you know, the Rockefellers and, you know, all these massive empires that own, you know, these, you know, Marriott, you know, all these Hilton, all these major brands, they've been losing. And they've been losing at a phenomenal rate because people don't want to spend $232 a night at the Hilton. They'd rather spend $240 at John's house and get a pool.
I'm joking.
Right, you know, but they'd rather spend that $230 and stay at John's house because John got two extra TVs, a couch, and a pool. But if you really look at it, Airbnb was ahead of its time.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And I think that's what's happening because even when I go out, you know, I stay at Airbnbs. I'll rather stay at an Airbnb because it feels more, you know, like I'm at home, right?
Versus
being in a hotel. Even when I go away, I'd rather rent the whole, you know, I'm with my friends, I'd rather rent the whole house Airbnb. But I know like the big hotels are definitely fighting the industry because I know they're taking a hit. So that's what came to mind. That's why I asked that question because I figured they might be, you know, they might be taking some sort of repercussion based on losing business.
100%. In 2011 to 2014, when Airbnb's infrastructure was being organized, the hotel hospitality industry had a chance to put an end to that. But, you know, if you look at the research, they didn't believe, just like they didn't believe about crypto, just like they didn't believe about Uber and Lyft. See, that's the thing. These government agencies, these, you know, long lengths of old money, they're not adapting to understanding how the new digital age of money is being made. And they under-evaluated what could really happen. And that's the only reason, you know, because they never believed that someone would rent someone else's home to stay in it rather than a hotel. They never believed someone would, you know, rather hop in a driver's car that wasn't a taxi. You know, these things are societal. and society changes and adapts, but they fail to realize it. And that's why these companies have sprung up to become multi-billion dollar corporations, you know, in evaluation at that, not corporation, but evaluation, because of the lack of, you know, commitment from these bigger, you know, money franchises to see that these little dogs will eventually be the ones. You know, when a dog gets a flea or a tick, it drives it crazy. And that's what just happened. You know, these big dogs are, they're getting drive crazy by all these shared industries. And that's what our generation is. You know, we don't own, we share.
Absolutely. And
just like Netflix took out Blockbuster, just like Uber and Lyft took out the yellow taxis, just like Airbnb's taking out hotels, and just like Amazon took out department stores. Everything is shared.
We've seen it happen with the, before we wrap up, the taxi medallion, right? Owning a medallion was like owning a house back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one of those, you know, what was that going for, Justin? You remember those, the taxi medallions? Yeah, it was like when to have that yellow taxi, there was a medallion, if I'm not mistaken, that you would have to have, which was like 300 grand. And then once Uber came out, I think those dropped to like 10 grand, right? Dropped in value to like 10 grand, the medallions.
And what made that worse was the drivers left.
What's that?
That's what made it worse. The drivers left because they could drive their own personal vehicles. So if you look at the age of society, these individuals who are creating things are creating things not to own it. Airbnb does not own one property. Turo does not own one car. Netflix, well, besides now, didn't own one movie. There was a stream service, a share service, and a car service that they didn't own. So they took out the value of owning assets and just owning the concept, the digital field. And that's why, even with the pandemic, stage or not, they flourished.
Absolutely. 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 No, and that's it's a really it's a different way to look at things, because we were taught growing up to you know, if you want to open a brick and mortar thing here, a store or a business, right? You want to have some sort of ownership. We're always taught ownership, but I think this is a new way of looking at ownership, you know, sharing, working together. And I think, you know, more people need to have that mindset of, you know, if you're going to open a business, it's okay to work with others and develop a network of people working together to fulfill one cause. No, it could all be different people. We're all working together to fulfill a cause, you know?
Digital equity.
There you go. Definitely, man. So, yeah, there we go. So it's a real estate coaching podcast. I have my boy Justin here. I have Coach, right? So we definitely, you know, enjoyed having you guys on, you know, Coach Platinum, Justin, Investment Growth Inc., Direct Auto. So thank you guys for jumping on. Anything, you know, you guys want to say to the people out there before we wrap up?
Man.
I think we dropped some gems today, right?
Yeah, but time is
up. I wish I could answer anybody's questions, but I don't know who got the questions, but I'm here.
Yeah, we're on live right here.
They could reach out to me on my Instagram. If you're looking for a car, any car needs, looking to get out of lease, whatever. You hit me up on at Direct Auto by LIC or at Invest and Grow Inc. Beware of the fake pages.
Coach, how we can find you down in Texas?
My Instagram is at Platinum, PLATINUM .DP. And yes, beware of the 80 fake pages, you know, working on verification at that. But I leave them with, listen, man, time is of the essence. You know, we're not getting younger, you know, that, you know, time keeps moving. So just do your best to, you know, no risk, no worry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So hold the line, guys. I'm going to.
Somebody just asked me a question. They asked, how can they get a car underneath a business?
Oh, so, good question, actually.
So I just want to go ahead and answer that really quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
to get a car underneath a business, your business could be opened yesterday. It doesn't really matter when your business was open because the business is not strong enough to get the car approved, which you're going to need like a personal guarantor. The personal guarantor has to be somebody within the business. So just for example, if Cash, you own a business, you can't have, you know, somebody that works for your business that's not actually on the business be the PG, which is the personal guarantor. You need somebody who's actually on the business paperwork, right? So then you're going to need the articles of corporation, your filing receipt, and your EIN number. And pretty much you can go from there. As long as your business doesn't need commercial plates, you can register it in your personal name.
Got it. And you can do the same with a lease, just throwing that out.
Of course. I have my first car in my company name, and then the car that I just purchased last week, I tried to get in my company name as well, and I had issues with it myself, only because of title. Like, it was from out of state, it was from Houston. I actually put a problem and visited DP. So, they gave me a hard time, but I got the car for such a good deal. I was like, yo, listen, I don't care if it don't go into business. Just put it in the personal, let me have it, let's go.
Gotcha. All right, cool. So you guys heard it there. Justin just, you know, let you guys know how you can get a car under your business name, right? So if you guys have businesses and you're trying to do that, make sure you guys hit Justin up. Definitely, guys, I appreciate both of you jumping on the Real Estate Coaching Podcast. It's definitely amazing. Hold the line, guys. I want to talk to you guys after, all right? So I appreciate all of you for watching. Thank you again. Check out the next episode.